podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to Athlete's Blueprint, listener. Today's guest is women's footballer Morgan Rogers. She's gone on to represent Wales, Cardiff Ladies, Tottenham Hotspur, Watford, and most recently, Billericay. During our chat, we pick up on grassroots on a Sunday to playing for Spurs against main rivals Arsenal at the Emirates, the journey to becoming a Welsh international footballer, the developing culture of women's football and how it's evolved throughout the years, misconceptions within the women's game, and what it really takes to earn your UEFA B coaching licence. Let's head over to the field and get stuck in.
What got you into football, Morgan?
To be honest with you, I've got a younger brother, and my dad sort of took him to this thing called a soccer school session. And I think I was sort of just hanging around at the time, and my dad was like, you know what, you can come as well. So I sort of went along with them. And then I think I ended up actually turning out to be more naturally suited to playing football than my brother did. So it was kind of like, I'll take that route, he can do something else instead. So I did that, played for teams with my brother, and then just sort of stuck at it from there on. And I think it was sort of, I kind of loved it that little bit more than perhaps he did. So he went and did rugby instead, and I decided to stick with the football and just continue doing that. So that's how I first got into it, was probably from going into that session with my brother and my dad.
How old were you at that time?
I was 5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So yeah, so I was really young. Yeah.
Really, yeah. And in those sort of first training sessions, if you like, as a 5-year-old, if you remember, what was you naturally good at?
My dad always tells me a story where there was this one drill where you had to sort of drag the ball over with your foot, and he said everyone was really struggling with it, and he said you just seemed to just get it straight away and just went off and did it, and it was almost like everyone was just watching as if to see who is this kid, why is she just doing it like naturally, it's just coming to her all of a sudden. And he said everyone was really struggling with it, and I just sort of got it straight away. And he said it was from sort of that moment my dad thought, maybe this could be something she's quite good at, but didn't really think that much of it. It was just sort of one of them things. My dad was like, if she keeps doing it, she keeps doing it. If she doesn't, it was just one of them things sort of thing. Never really gushed it. It was just like, just do it if you enjoy it sort of thing. It's quite funny because the first few sessions, my dad was like, he had to keep joining in if I kept crying. So he had to keep holding my hand and doing everything with me. Whereas all the other parents would just let their kids go and do it. But he was like, yes, for the first few sessions, and I sort of just seemed to go and do it myself and didn't faze me at all. But yeah, I think that was the first sort of memories I've got of it. And what my dad tells me now is sort of the same, sort of lines up with what I can remember, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And how important is football to your family?
Well, this is another funny story. Is in my family is all rugby. So both my granddads played, one more than the other, played rugby. My dad played rugby. Mum isn't interested in sport at all. So no one really knows where the football's come from. But it's just sort of, I think as I've sort of kept playing, they've grown to love it, if that makes sense. My dad still and mum still joke now that they prefer going to watch rugby than they do football, but I'm like, as long as you're playing, we're happy to come and watch. It's kind of a running joke in the family that no one really knows where it's come from, but it's just sort of one of them things that I've just sort of set with and everyone's sort of gone along with it.
That's quite funny, actually. I think it's really lovely that, you know, they may not be the biggest fans of it. Obviously, they're a huge fan of you, so they're going to come and watch. And in terms of some of those early matches, you know, it doesn't have to be when you're 5, but when you first feeling more established in the game.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
I think growing up, I played with boys up until I was 12. When then I got forced, there was a ruling where you had to make the switch to go and play with girls. So I think I played with boys up until I was 12. I was in the same sort of team as my brother. So we were playing together for a lot of the early years. And then when the age group started to sort of become more prominent, we had to sort of split. But I just remember when I was young, I know it's different now for girls. It's a lot different. But just being accepted by the boys, like it wasn't an issue, I was just one of them. And I think because we'd all started the same time, it wasn't like a big thing where, oh my god, she's a girl, she's playing in the she's playing, do you know what I mean? It was just sort of one of them things. I was a part of the team, I was one of the players, it didn't matter. So I think for me, and I think I developed a lot in that years with the boys. I don't think I'd probably be at the stage I'm at now, technically, physically, if I hadn't done that. I do think I always recommend girls, especially when they're younger, go and play with the boys team, because I feel you get that bit more, I don't know if this is the right word, but aggression, you get a bit more, you learn the game, I feel like, in a different way, which then helps you when you get a bit older. So I feel like I really enjoyed my early years of playing boys football, and then found it a bit weird, I'm going to switch to girls, because it was just like a completely different game. But yeah, I think that's what I can remember, is just sort of really enjoying it, and my brother being there for the majority of it as well.
What were those nuances of switching from men's or boys' football to girls' football?
So I think this is probably a known fact. The men's game is probably a lot quicker than the women's game. But I think when I then went to play with girls, I sort of felt like I had all the time in the world to just do what I wanted to do. Don't get me wrong, how you go, that's completely different and it changes. But if you look at grassroots level, it's sort of that. For me, the big factor is just the speed. And I feel like that's sort of why I didn't... I went to girls football when I was 12 and then tried to go back to boys when I was about 15. And the amount of abuse and stuff I got because I was going, being a girl in a boys team, just wasn't accepted at all. So I think that was a big sort of telling factor. But I think I then struggled going back to boys at age 15 because I'd got used to slower pace again. So it was, I think that for me was the big difference at grassroots level, is just the speed. I think boys are naturally, everyone knows this, naturally stronger, naturally faster. So it's just that thing of sort of adjusting to that was the main difference for me, I would say.
And just picking up on, you mentioned the abuse that you had. Was that coming from just, you know, players in amongst your age, or was that coming from, not obviously not staff, but, you know, was it, how was that coming about?
I think I went sort of, I, to be honest with you, I never signed because I went, I did a few fitness sessions and I was like, man, I absolutely hate it. Like, it's pointless me doing this. The boys were never really, I think it was almost like any time I'd nutmeg someone, they'd be a big fast because I was a girl and I'd nutmeg the boy. So it was just a big, like, thing. And I was like, that's how, not how I want to be playing. If I nutmeg someone, I want it to be off merit, and I want the applause to be off the fact that it's a good bit of skill that I've done to get that, not because I'm a girl that's just nutmeg the boy. And I think what was most shocking for me at the time was a lot of it was coming from the parents. And I think my mum sort of clocked on to that a few sessions in and was like, it's not really where my mum and dad wanted me to be in that stage, and not where I wanted to be either. Firstly, I wasn't accepted by the boys, but then I was getting a lot of cheers and stuff off the parents as well. So then it's not nice for my mum and dad to hear if they're coming to watch or whatever. So it was just sort of a no-go from the start. It was just not really where I wanted to be in that stage, if that makes sense.
Understood. And the switch then to, you know, taking up women's football sort of permanently, if you like.
Yeah.
What's the culture like at grassroots and building up?
It's good. I like the grassroots culture. It's like Sunday league, isn't it? So it's a bit like you just get to do what you want sort of thing. It's a bit of a laugh. You're just playing with your mates for the fun of it. I think women's football, I think, is different to men's in that sense. I think they're not so, I don't know if this is the right way to put it across, but not so judgmental. I think because in boys football, you tend to have them parents that push their kids from young age, and they think they're going to be the next Messi or Ronaldo. I think in women's football, especially at grassroots level, it's sort of, you may have joined because your mate in school is playing, or you may be doing it just because it's a bit of a laugh and you just fancy a kickabout. So I do think it's different in that sense, in that I think boys football is a lot more judgmental and there's a lot more pushing, whereas I think in girls football it's a lot more, just a bit more chilled, a bit more relaxed, which I quite liked growing up because I'm quite a chilled person, so it was quite kind of like that kind of suited me as a person. But yeah, I think it's a really welcoming environment. I always recommend go boys first and do it from a young age, because then you grow up with them, and then I say when you go to girls you'll find it a lot easier to play and to put your stamp on games, because you will have had that experience with boys, but you will find the women's environment a lot more welcoming, and it's just a nice place to be.
Does that run true with the coaching sort of setup, if you like, and how you're coached?
Yeah, I think grassroots especially, you know, like boys as well, a lot of dads just tend to run teams, right? They just tend to take over and just run the team or whatever, do the coaching. I think in girls football, because it's their daughter, they tend to be a lot more protective. So it's sort of that thing of when you're in, they're protective of you all. Do you know what I mean? Because it's a girls' sport and whatever. I also think it's nice that in girls football, you get mums that set up to coach as well, which I think is quite a nice thing, because in boys football, I feel like mums feel restricted, not so like they sort of let the dad do that. Do you know what I mean? Whereas in girls football, it's a bit more like no one really cares. You just get involved. You just do give what you can sort of thing. So I think that's quite nice for women's football. And yeah, it's just a nice environment to be a part of. The coaches are always really welcoming, always really supportive. Like they just got a lot better in the last few years with the stuff like the Euros, the World Cup, being a lot more out there for people to see. There's a lot more young girls now playing football, which is lovely to see because it was now that the kids were all young.
And these sort of younger players or younger girls that are coming through now,
yeah.
Is it, in your opinion, is it easier to rise through the pyramid of football now than it was perhaps when you first started?
I think in terms of grassroots, there's a lot more opportunities for girls now because when I was younger, there were no girls' team. It was just a boys' team and that was that. You had to just get on with it. I think now there's so much more opportunity. The coaching stand is better the higher you go. So I think when I first was getting into like regional centres and all that sort of stuff, it was sort of unheard of. Now there's, if I go back home to Wales, there's regional centres all over. There's systems in place to help players that want to progress, whereas that wasn't there when I was young, but I had to sort of find my own way. Not find my own way because I got picked up, but it was just unheard of. It was like I never knew anything about this until I was picked up, if that makes sense. Whereas now you hear of girls, well, I coped a bit when I'm back home, and I sort of hear girls being like, oh, I want to do this because I want to get into a regional centre. I never had that aspiration when I was there because I just didn't know it existed. So I think it's a lot more known, it's a lot more cured of, there's a lot more sort of push for it now in girls football. The systems are in place for if you want to progress, you've got every opportunity to do so. Whether that's easier or not is another thing because there's also a lot more competition. Whereas when I was younger, it was just sort of, if you were good, you got picked up. Whereas now there could be 3, 4, 5, 6 good players in that position. So you've got a bit of competing to do. So I don't necessarily know if it's easier. I think the opportunities are a lot better. So if you want to get better and progress, you've got systems and that in place. But in terms of competition-wise, I don't really know. I've not, like I said, I'm not in that position. I was just a bit like, when I was younger, it wasn't there sort of thing. But yeah.
And I think we should talk about getting picked up because obviously, you know, you have played at a very high level and you still do. And so what was it like, you know, getting scouted or getting picked up? Like, who were some of the first clubs that took interest in you?
To be honest, I was still playing grassroots when I got my first national team call-up, so I was still playing for my local club. I've got no idea how I got picked up. So I still say when I coach girls now, I'm still like, you never know who's watching. You've just got to always be on your best sort of... Because I genuinely to this day, mum and dad don't know. We just have no idea how I was picked up to get into the national team. And it's quite funny because when I first got picked up, my first sort of involvement was I got a letter through the door. That doesn't happen now, it's all via email or whatever. So it's quite nice to still have that letter to be like, this is when I first got picked up. I don't think I fully, mum and dad the same, realised that it was for Wales until I went and showed up to the camp and everyone was walking around in their Wales tracksuits and I was like, oh, right, this is like a big deal. Like, I'm involved now. And I was quite young at the time. I was 12 when I first got picked up. So it was a 13th camp. I was the youngest one there by about two years. And it's quite funny because there was a tournament going on at the time. Like, they call it the Bob Doherty tournament. It's quite a big thing for the home nations to play each other at under 13th level. And I found out that I couldn't go because I was ineligible because of my age. So I had to wait another year before I could actually go and play in it, which was quite funny at the time because my mum and dad, like, I'd gone from sort of playing grassroots to all of a sudden, like, being involved in this system. I think now it's sort of, like I say, the regional centres push skills forward, they've got names forward sort of thing. But like I say, when I was picked up, I have no idea how I first got picked up. Yeah, for Wales, I literally no idea.
And so you get this mysterious letter.
Yeah.
You go along, as you said, you're one of the youngest there. What were some of the differences that you found instantaneously stepping into an international group of players and coaches?
It was really scary, if I'm being honest, because I'd sort of gone not realising what it was, and then when I showed up, I had to stay away from home for 3, 4 days, whatever it was, so it was like a big thing. Stayed away from home, it was like training every day, there was like recovery sessions, but I'd never been a part of, because I'd just been playing grassroots, so it was all really new. I'm quite a shy person, or I'm a bit better now, but when I was younger, I was really, really shy, so I think it was sort of that thing of there's a new group of people, new set of coaches on you to learn, new systems, new way of playing, how professional it is, how to be professional, how to learn that quite quickly. I think it was all just a bit scary and a bit of a shock to the system. I think obviously then the older I got and the more camps I went on, it sort of became second nature. And I think it's quite funny when mum's like, you still carry some of that now with you round when I'm just in these day life. I don't realise it, but you just do it. But yeah, I can remember going on that first camp and the coach at the time was Jane Ludlow, who's quite a legend within the women's game. But I literally had no idea because I hadn't grown up watching it. I'd never realised who it was. And then when we went home and I sort of Googled it, I was like, oh my God, she's like played for Arsenal and stuff. Like Wales is one of Wales' best players. So it was from that first camp, I sort of realised then, right, if I want to do this seriously, I need to start thinking about everything that I need to do to be able to put myself in the best position.
And obviously being around Jane and the rest of the team, what were some of those, signs or some of those actions that they made you do to start changing you into more of an athlete?
I think it was just the amount of training, because obviously when you're playing grassroots, you just forward to class a week, right? And as a kid, I'd be out in the street playing anyway, so it wouldn't be such a big problem. But it was just like different type of training. So it was, they'd be technical session, or they'd be a fitness session, or they'd be a tactical session, or I'd just be like, right, okay, I need to start thinking now. When I'm training on my own, I need to try and incorporate all these different elements into my own training. And then small stuff like recovery. I'd never done that as a kid. It was just sort of, you play a game, you go, and maybe I'd go out and play in the street for a bit. Once I'd played a game, you know what I mean? It was just sort of one of those things. I'd been on that camp and I thought, right, if I play now, I'll train. I need to come home. I need to maybe get some food in me is the first thing. And the second thing, maybe get a stretch on, because that's probably what I need to be doing now. So it was just all habits that perhaps if you've been involved in an academy like a boy from a young age, you'd know that stuff. But for me, I've never done that. So it was all just very new. But it's just small stuff. Perhaps people don't even realise that I had to do that all quite quickly and then take into such all stuff I was doing outside of national team stuff.
Yeah, no, I completely get it. And, you know, whilst I never played at any level or anything, I'm very much the same as you. You know, you play football on the field or in Power League or something like that. And yeah, you just go home and have dinner. So moving on then. So obviously being around the Welsh setup, the Welsh international setup, and, you know, knowing that at the time you're still playing grassroots, what pushed you into more of the professional direction?
So I sort of went with Wales. I went all through the age groups. So I did 15, 17, 18. I was quite lucky as well in the fact that when I was in that, I was getting pushed early. So like I got 15s at 12, then I got 17s at 13. So I was always quite ahead of the game, if that makes sense. Because they'd clearly seen something in me that they liked, so they were just pushing that. So then I got pushed. Then I played for Cardiff. I saw the Cardiff when I was 16, senior team. So it was kind of like Jane sort of spoke to me and said, look, we'd like you to be a part of it. We think it would be a good step in your development to be involved in senior football. Now you're sort of at that level. So I got involved in senior football. Played at Cardiff for 3 years because I was still in school. So it was sort of like I couldn't go anywhere like with distance because I need to be in school the next day or I need to be studying or whatever. So it was just sort of Cardiff was local. It was like ideal to suit what I was doing at the time. So finished school, finished my A-level sort of thing, got to first year of COVID, and it was the year I went to university, so it was sort of that sort of tied in. So it was sort of, I was at that point where I was sort of like, right, if I want to take football seriously, I now need to think about the next step. What am I going to do? But COVID hit, so it was sort of like first year, football really wasn't happening anyway.
Yeah.
I didn't want to pay expenses of living away from home if I could just do it. If it was all going to be online, it was just pointless.
Yeah.
So I decided to stay at home for first year, just carry on sort of when Cardiff were training, just sort of join in with it. So sort of finished that first year of uni with Cardiff. And then I got, one of my mates, Esther, was at Spurs at the time. And I sort of reached out to her and said, look, how do I sort of get in the academy system in England? Do you know how to do it sort of thing? Because I'd never been through that process. So it was sort of, is there any tips or advice you could give me? And she was like, look, I know. So we kind of cut to Wales, Rhianne, and she'd gone and taken over at Spurs. She was first team head coach at Spurs.
Oh, wow.
So Esther said to me, look, she was like, I'm in the Spurs system at the minute. I can give you contact details. You can email and just reach out. She was like, I would recommend emailing other clubs as well. So I think I emailed people like Man United, Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, as many as I could think of, Brighton. I was just emailing, seeing if there was any opportunity, any trials about if I could do it. So I think Man United showed a bit of interest. Brighton showed some interest. Chelsea had a ruling in place that if you wasn't living within London, you couldn't sort of play. So that sort of ruled that out straight away. Yeah. So there was some that just got ruled out straight. So then Spurs, they all took a bit of interest. I went for a trial at Birmingham. I couldn't get to the trial, but they wanted to sign me. Based off my footage and stuff, I said, and they were like, we'd like to sign you anyway. Spurs similar. So I sort of had the decision then of trying to match up a uni with like transferring uni to match up with that so I could sort of live in that area and still be able to go training. So Spurs, I managed to get a phone call with, she's coach now at Crystal Palace, Laura Kaminsky, Miss Pope to the 21s at the time. And she said, look, she sort of rang me and she said, oh, if you could send over your footage and CCT me and stuff, we'll have a look. I'll have a chat with Rhianne, see that she already knows you and we'll sort of have a discussion from there. So within the hour, she brings me back and she's like, look, we want to sign you. We want to do in the 21. So I hadn't even had to do a trial run, which was quite nice. It was just sort of like, she wants me straight away, which was a nice feeling to have. So I think in the end, it came down to the decision. I went up to Smith, did a train test and see how I felt. I enjoyed it, liked the setup, liked Laura. So I was like, you know what, this could be a good step. Brighton, I never got the opportunity to go there and experience it because just things just didn't work out that way. But it came down to, in the end, it was between Spurs and Brighton. And I'd sort of said, look, I've been Spurs, like, to be honest, uni times in nicely, so I went to University of Hertfordshire, half an hour away from the training ground, it's perfect. So I was like, look, it got to that point as well in the summer where I was a bit like, do I really want to do this? Do I want to make the jump and move away from home and sort of take this seriously now from here on end? So it got to the point and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to make the jump, I'm going to take the risk. If I want to do it, I've got to do it. So I just did it and I moved and I started to make Spurs. So I think that's how I sort of first felt that bit of experience of professional environment, was through just taking a risk and just emailing people. I still do it now if I need something, just email around and see what's out there sort of thing. But yeah, that's how I first got my Spurs, like, way into the professional club sort of thing, was from that.
Absolutely, and I know that you went on to play against Arsenal and some really cool things. I mean, what was it like, you know, do you literally sign the piece of paper as you see players do now nowadays, like with a standing there with a shirt and all of that stuff? Or is it a little bit more informal and it's, yeah, how does that work?
I think my experience might be slightly different to others because at the time when I first signed, I was still in Wales because I hadn't actually moved up there yet because obviously uni doesn't start until like September. Mm-hmm. And pre-season for Spurs was like mid-July. So it was sort of a bit like, I was delayed in going to Spurs because of the sort of thing. So I think my signing experience was it sort of came via email. I signed it, emailed it back, and then I was the Spurs player sort of thing. So when I first moved up there, I was lucky enough that Esther's family took me in and let me live with them for a month and a bit before we start, so I could do the pre-season with Spurs. I think I moved up, did the start of the training sort of thing. I was like loving life. I was like, this is brilliant. This is what I've always wanted sort of thing. And then it got to sort of, I think it was a week in. I'd been up there a week and I'd been training and stuff. And I would play the game on like a Wednesday night. It was like our first pre-season friendly with Spurs 21. So I played it on the Wednesday night. Thursday morning, I sort of woke up and Esther's went for a walk. It was right next to Ali Pally. So I went for a walk around Ali Pally. As I'm walking, I get a phone call. Laura's ringing me. So I answered the phone and she said, oh, we need you to go for a heart scan in London. And I was like, oh. Or is something wrong? Or she's like, oh no, Rhianne wants you to be involved in the game on Saturday with the first team, so you need to go and get a heart scan before we can sort of allow you to be in that environment. So first thing I did, rang my dad. I was like, but I've got to be called up sort of thing. So I went and got the heart scan, which was scary in itself because being from Wales, I've never been on the tube, I've never done anything like that, so it was all a new experience. So I went and got the heart scan, come back, all went through. So in the space of a week, I'd moved to London and then was playing against Arsenal on Saturday. And it was all just a bit like, whoa, this is like completely like mind-blowing stuff. I got to the game on Saturday. It was in the stadium, which was unbelievable in itself. Just being around that, the players, being in that sort of environment was like, oh my God, this is literally what it's like to be a professional footballer. Played on the pitch, big crowd there to what I'm used to because obviously I'd gone from pretty much grassroots. Okay, I played 3 years in Cardiff, but it was just like family coming to watch.
Yeah.
So then being in front of a crowd, and I thought, oh, I've only been here a week. If I get 5 minutes, I'll be lucky sort of thing. gets to half time and the goalkeeper coach comes over to me, he goes down and, "Are you ready?" And I said, "For what?" And he said, "You're going on." And I said, "Right, okay." So I sort of got myself ready, ran on the pitch, was like, "Oh my God, this is amazing." And unfortunately, my mum and dad couldn't be there because it all happened so quickly.
Yeah.
They couldn't be there, so it was all a bit of a shock. So I'd run on the pitch. I sort of got myself set up in my position, looked up to who was opposite me, and it was Beth Mead. I was, I've literally gone from playing grassroots to playing against Beth Mead. So it was all stuck over my experience. And then I carried on. I had quite a bit of involvement with the first team during pre-season. Was lucky enough for that to happen. And then it was one of the last weekends of pre-season. I'd gone home to see mum and dad for a weekend. And as I was in the house, my phone rings, unknown number. So I answered the call. And it was Gemma Granger, the Wales manager. She was like, "Look, we've watched your game against Arsenal. We really like what we see. We'd like you to come into camp. You've got your first senior goal," that sort of thing. So I was like, "Dear." So this all happened on the weekend. And she's like, "Oh, we want you to come into camp on the Sunday." So I was like, "Right, okay." So I packed a bag, went to camp. And that was how I literally went from almost being a nobody to sort of getting my foot in the door and my name being out there a bit. And then it was getting used to the media, my name sort of being all my mates, tagging me in posts, being like, "Look, you're all on BBC and whatever." And I was like, "Right, okay, this is a bit of a culture shock." It was a pretty mad 6 weeks. But when I look back, it's probably the best 6 weeks ever because it just all happened so quickly. Yeah, it was just a bit bizarre. And then I sort of went with Spurs, played with the 21s up until Christmas. And I'd still been involved with Wales in that time. Helen Ward at the time was involved with Wales. And she was playing for Watford in the Championship. And she was like, "Look, I think you really benefit from being in the Championship. Watford want to sign you." So I sort of went on a dual registration of Watford and they finished out the season there. And that's where I sort of did my first season in sort of being a professional environment, if you'd like to put it that way. That's how my season went. But it was just a bit of a wild year. 2021 was definitely a year I won't forget in Ireland.
That sounds wild. Like, just to go from, you know, as you said, playing just grassroots straight through to stepping out of the Emirates and, you know, being around the Tottenham setup and then obviously getting a senior cap for Wales and things like that. And I was going to ask you, actually, you spoke a lot about them preparing you and the media side of things. How do they media train footballers?
So I've never really had media training, to be honest. It's just sort of one of them things of don't say anything controversial, you know, like all the generic stuff you're probably expecting footballers to be told. But it was sort of, to be honest, I've had a bit of experience with it from the age group stuff, because I'd been captain of every age group and been involved. So I was always sort of the forefront person of, "Look, we need you to do this interview," or "We need you to speak." So it was sort of that sort of thing. But then when I got in seniors, it was like, "Right, we need you to be in front of a camera now." Like, with there's going to be a, like, I think it was the second year I was there was the first bit of culture shock I had in terms of media, where they sat me down in a press room when there was press everywhere. I was a bit like, "Right, this is a bit different to what I'm used to." And I think I can speak Welsh as well. So a lot of the media I got pushed for was the Welsh speaking stuff. So it was sort of that bit of, it was just a bit of a shock to the system, to be honest. But I had a little bit of experience with it. So it wasn't like completely unknown.
Yeah.
But it was just a bit new, if that makes sense. Because it was just like it'd be set up a level. So it was just a bit like, "Right, just adjust to this now, just get used to it." But I haven't had any media training as such. It was just sort of, don't say anything controversial. Think about what you're going to say before you say it. Just the sort of stuff you'd be told by your mum and dad. Do you know what I mean? If you was to do it anyway.
Fair enough. No, I just thought I'd ask because, yeah, you know, you can definitely tell sometimes when, you know, perhaps a manager or a player has gone through a transition of saying what they really think to being more guarded and considered with their wording, if you like.
Yeah.
So of course, you know, through your career you were at Watford, and what made you take a change to go to Billericay?
To be honest with you, I think in Watford it sort of got a bit to the point where I wasn't playing. They dropped down into some, gone from the champ to tier three. And I think that off season between that 2021 season and the 2022 season was a really difficult one for me because it was sort of a bit of the unknown. I had another year left in Hearts, so I was going to be in London for another year. I wasn't really sure if I wanted to stay with Watford. then they didn't sort of offer me the best deal. So it was all a bit like, and for me being young at the time and that being my first experience of it, it was just all a bit mind-blowing and a bit confusing. And I sort of now try to go through that process again. I know what to expect, but at the time I didn't. So it was just a bit of an off-putting situation. Then we went into the season. I never really got a shot from the start of the season. Like, we had new management take over. I like sort of always been sort of, they'd never really give me that chance, if that makes sense. And all I was hoping for was that chance. It got to Christmas, and I sort of had a conversation with Gemma in Wales, and we sort of come to the conclusion, like, I need to be playing. I can't be, I'm still young. At the end of the day, all I want to do is play football. If I'm going to be sitting on the bench, then I'd rather not be involved in that environment, if that makes sense. And it got to the point where I just, through that experience, I just really wasn't enjoying football. It was like, because I'm not playing every week, it was sort of like, Sunday I'd just get used to just going for a run, or just, and I'd be like, Sunday I should be playing football, that's what I should be doing.
Yeah.
So it got to the point where I really wasn't enjoying it, and my mum and dad had sat me down and had a conversation, and they were like, if you want to enjoy football again and get back to the Morgan we know and love, you need to be somewhere where you're playing every week and enjoying your football. So it was sort of, I was playing for the uni, because I hadn't played for uni the first year because I was so busy with Spurs and stuff, I just had my time. The second year, so my last year in uni, but my second year in Hearts, I was sort of like, you know what? There's an offer of a scholarship if I play for the uni team. I'm not playing for Watford. I might as well go and just do it. At least then I'm getting game time sometime during the week. When I played for them, I was absolutely loving it. It was just like being back at grassroots again. I was dominating most games because I was just that little, like, I'd been playing at a level higher, so I was just standing out in most games. So my first game for uni, we played against UCFB.
Yeah.
And the UCFB coach is the Billericay coach, but I had no idea. So we played, and we was like something like 3-0 down at half time. And I thought, oh no, what have I done here? I should not have started playing for this uni. I can't be losing like this every week. We get to the second half, and I scored a hat trick. Oh, I think it was actually 3-0 set for half time, and then I scored a hat trick and we won the game 3-2. And he came up to me after the game, James, and he said, look, I've sort of seen you in Watford. I've just experienced you being on the losing end here in this game. Would you be interested in coming to Billericay? And at the time, I sort of pushed it off. And this was like September time. I was like, no, I'm going to sit with Watford. I want to see what happens.
Yeah.
But for Christmas time, I thought, you know what? I'm just going to reach out a message and see if the offer's still there. So I reached out to James and I said, look, is the offer still sort of there? And he was like, yeah, come in on for a training session, see how you feel. So I went, had a training session. I'm going to be honest, the first few training sessions, I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I'm quite shy, like you say, and I'm a new player in a new environment, it always takes me a while. I started my first game, and then a few weeks later, against Oxford for Billericay, so I was decided I was going to sign. My dad was like, look, you've got the option of staying Watford where you're not playing, or you take Billericay, you sign Billericay. You don't play, then you haven't lost anything. You're sort of in the same position. So I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna take a risk and do it. Took the risk, started my first game against Oxford, and just didn't look back from that point. It was just sort of like uni football was going well. Billericay was going well. It was just sort of like old Morgan sort of come back to life a bit, and it was quite a nice feeling. I was just loving life. I just loved Billericay last season. It was so good. The girls were really welcoming. I got on with them really well. It was just nice to be in an environment where I could just enjoy and be back to playing football. Like, I liked playing football. And James was really supportive of that. I was just like, you know what? Go and express yourself. Just do what you need to do sort of thing. So I think that's how I sort of made the decision then to commit, was just like, you know what? I'm going to give it to Billericay and just go 100% into that.
Love that. And is James still part of the setup today?
So James is still first team coach, yeah. So me and James have had quite a good relationship over the last like year and a half, where he sort of knows me quite well now and I know him quite well. And I think he respects me and I respect him enough for him to say, like, if I'm not playing for a week, he'll give me a reason and that'll be that. But if I'm playing, he's always there supporting me 100%. And I think in the last couple of games, I had a bit of an injury before Christmas and I've sort of come back in after Christmas. We went into a meeting with him after Christmas and I was like, look, I'm looking at it. I said, new year, new Morgan, we're going to sort of hit this year road like feet on the floor, just going full force for it. And I think I've really started to put performances in our last couple of games. And he said to me, funny enough, last week, he's like, old Morgan is back. And I was like, yeah, she's back, all right. So I think it was quite nice that we've got that for relationship now, where he knows when I'm playing well, he knows what it looks like sort of thing. So it's quite nice that he thought that. Yeah, and I've been, look, the girls and what he offered me the end of last season was a big reason why I decided to go back there this season, and decided to come back and live in Essex for another year sort of thing. So it was just, that was a big part of the decision. But yeah, I've just loved life. I've been a rookie for the last year and a bit, to be fair.
There's nothing better than enjoying what you do day to day. And I was actually going to touch on the distance. So are you still part of the Wales setup today?
Yeah, so I'm sort of on the fringes at the minute because obviously been a rookie tier three, you've got a lot of players now in the championship and stuff. But because I sort of committed to doing a master's up here, it's sort of like I've had to stick with Billericay because that's just, it's convenient, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm still on the fringe, not as involved as I was maybe when I was like involved in Spurs and stuff when I first broke through. But I'm still involved and I'm still in contact with the management and stuff. So yeah, I'm still there hanging on, I think, just answering my feed. But I'm still there, which is the main thing.
Do you have ambition of playing for Wales again?
Yeah, so I've never actually got a cap. I was all caps for a year and a half, I think it was. In total, where I was literally every couple of weeks, it was going away to a different country with them and experiencing that, which was a cool experience in itself. But yeah, I think now I'm sort of at the point where I sort of, that make or break year for me in terms of if I want to get back in it, I've got to make that the next risk, if that sort of makes sense. Like the risk is going and moving to London.
Yeah.
Now the risk is what's the next risk for me to be able to get into that sort of environment and set up again, if that makes sense. I think that's something I definitely want to aspire to. Look, there's no better feeling than representing your country, so I would like to get that cap at some point. I feel like I've worked really hard to get to that point, and I'm just continuing on that journey of sort of, when it happens, it'll happen. If it's meant to happen, it'll meant to happen, but I would love for it to come at some point in the future, yeah.
I believe it will. I believe, well, with your determination and just the way that you've come across, I don't see why it can't. And one question I was going to ask is, be it that you've kind of gone up and down the levels, I suppose.
Yeah.
In terms of diet and nutrition, has anything changed on that footprint?
So I think as a kid, it's actually going to sound really bad, but I didn't really have my nutrition that much. It was just sort of, look, I'm going to put whatever I need to put in me just for me to be able to play football. As many hours of the day as is possible, that's what I'm going to do. But I think as I've got older, I have realised, and I wouldn't say that's like, I think I first came to notice that maybe after my season in Spurs, I still wasn't really that up on my nutrition, if I'm being honest in all forms. But I think after that year, it was sort of like, right, Morgan, you need to start taking a responsibility now and thinking about what you're eating. And that's somewhere in between my Spurs season ended and sort of deciding to commit to Watford. I actually hired a personal trainer and sort of started really focusing on myself and my diet and all that sort of stuff. So little habits I've sort of picked up, I've taken with me now throughout. So now I do eat a lot better than what I used to. Don't get me wrong, I still have a takeaway now and again, and yeah, like everybody does. It's all in configuration, right? But yeah, I think I do now think a lot more about what I'm eating, what I'm putting in my body in order to fuel myself to be able to perform to the best like of my ability. So I do think the last couple of years that's something I've learned. But I am a firm believer of, as a kid, you should probably just enjoy yourself. You're a kid once only, yeah. Still. Just enjoy it. But I do think if you want to take it seriously, probably think about it a lot sooner than what I did. But yeah, it's something you would need to consider.
I was going to say, you know, be it where you've been and played football and the responsibility that you've had and experiences, do you feel kind of responsible for passing some of those attributes down to your Billericay teammates?
Yeah, I wouldn't so much say my Billericay teammates because I'm classed as one of the young ones in that environment because they're all, there's quite a few older. Now we've found a few youngsters, so it's sort of what I sort of always, when a new player comes in, want to be welcoming because I know that's how I'd want to be treated if I was to go into a new environment. But in terms of passing my knowledge, I think I did my coaching qualification in the summer, so I did my B-Lancers coaching qualification in the summer, and it was sort of an eye-opening experience because I did it and I thought, right, this is something I could really use to benefit the next generation. Maybe not like I say my Billericay teammates, but I like to think of it as girls in Wales because there was never that opportunity for me there when I was younger. So for last summer, I did a bit of one-to-one coaching with some young girls and boys as well that would just, I'd put an ad out on Facebook and I got wanted to get people to come along and sort of participate in my sessions. But it was when I started doing that, I realised, you know what, I've got knowledge and I've got skills that I need to pass on, because I've been lucky enough to have coaching and at the top level that maybe girls in Wales don't have access to, but I could definitely pass on some of what I've learned to them. So I do feel like I've got a bit of a responsibility. And I'm sure if you ask any player who's been involved in top levels or even at clubs like tier 3 and tier 4, they want to pass on what they know to younger generations, because we never had that when we were younger. So it's sort of that responsibility of make the game better for the people who are coming after you. So I think I do feel a responsibility to pass that on, but I think it was only through doing that coaching qualification in the summer that I did. I think I had that responsibility. Before then, I'd sort of be like, you know what, I realise I'm a role model for girls, but I don't really see how I can impact them at all. Whereas when I did that, it was sort of like, now I know, I realise by what I say, what I do, how I act, that all influences how a young girl may think and aspire to be in football. So yeah, I think it's definitely something I feel a responsibility towards.
Awesome. And I was going to say, now that you've been around and got your UEFA B licence, are you kind of chipping in with ideas to James?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's my job to do that. But I don't get me wrong, if I take something or I think tactically there's something I can help him with, or I've seen something that maybe he hasn't, then I think we've got enough respect for me to take that idea to him and him to decide what to do with that. But in terms of giving him tips and stuff, no, that's not for me to do.
The student has become the master.
Yeah, that's not for me to do, unfortunately.
And when you're sort of looking forward to football now, and generally where women's football is, and the energy that's been put into it to really elevate it and promote it to a wider audience, what do you sort of think about the current status of women's football?
This is always a question I get asked when I'm doing like media and stuff like that. It's always a question that comes, and I think my answer is always going to be the same. It's come a long way from when I was younger. It's come a long, long way since when I was little. There's now, like I said earlier on, there's opportunities for girls that were never there when I was younger. You look at the Euros, you look at the World Cup, look at the crowds that are now being attracted to go and watch women's football. Young girls have now got something to aspire to, which I think is absolutely brilliant and something I wish had been there when I was younger. But I do think there's a long way to go still. I think we've come a long way, but there's still strides that need to be taken for it to be better. I think you look, you've got the top level, okay, your top level is professional now. You've got players that are earning, but it's not still nowhere near what the men are earning. Mm. You look at your championship, you've got, I'd say 95% of the championship is professional, but you've still got about 5% of players who probably play and work alongside in order to be able to keep their dream of being a footballer alive. Then you get to tier 3, and almost all of tier 3 are working alongside playing football. So there's that. I think if you look at that in men's football, you don't have that at them sort of levels. So I think, like I say, if you look at it in that aspect, there's still ways to go. But I think, like I say, it's come a long way from when I was younger, but there's still a long way for it to go. But what's happened in the last few years in terms of the Euros and the World Cup is just a sign of how much it has improved. But I do think it will get bigger and better in years to come, hopefully.
Absolutely, and I share that as well. You know, I'm hopeful that it will grow. And yeah, I think, you know, money is so synonymous with football.
Yeah.
And in terms of, you know, making a living from playing women's football.
Yeah.
Outside of the Premier League or, you know, the top league, is that possible?
I think it definitely is. Like I say, championship, you could probably get a living out of it as well. I know a lot of my friends are in the champ and are doing full football solely, so you definitely can do it. There's opportunities in countries like Scotland and Spain and stuff as well to be able to make a living out of it. But I do think you need, as a women's footballer, you need to always have a backup. You never know when your pay might go down or you're going to be in a situation where you need a job, or because it's just not the same as men's football where you can just be a footballer and you're sorted for life. It's not that sort of thing. So I always do think you tend to find a women's footballer that will do coaching qualifications or will be in uni alongside playing football, because you always know that you need something. So I do think there's that aspect to women's football that probably isn't up to scratch for the men's. But yeah, I definitely think you can make a living, but it's probably not as much as people think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And that, I kind of anticipated that, and I thought as much, just because, you know, it runs the same in some men's sports as well, be it rugby or cricket or anything like that. You know, the contracts and things just aren't at the same level. I guess sponsorship and things like that play a huge part. I was going to ask you, so of course women's transfer fees have been rising steadily, should we say. They're still obviously, you know, not at the same comparison as men football.
Yeah.
Can you imagine us soon seeing, you know, the first £1 million player or anything like that?
It's hard to predict because you just never know what clubs' intentions are. So you look at Newcastle, for example, this season they back their women's section a lot more, but you never know when that may happen. I don't get me wrong, I don't think it's going to get to the level of men's football in the next 10 years. I think it's going to be a lot longer before that happens. I just don't think there's the same backing, so sponsorship, as the men have got to be able to do that. So I think people need to be realistic and think it's not going to happen like it is in the men's, like overnight. It's going to take a while. I to be honest with you, the way the transfer fees have been going, I don't see perhaps the £1 million player being that far off.
Yeah.
I'd like to hope that it's not far off, because that would mean a big step in women's football. But yeah, I think if you're looking at it realistically, it's going to be a while before you start to see any of these sort of things happening, because it's just not got the same backing as other sports and other and the men's football has, to be quite frank.
Yeah, I completely agree. And kind of moving in another direction now, what are some of the misconceptions of women's football?
That it's the same as men's. I think that's the biggest one. I think if you watched the World Cup in the summer, you will realise that they're almost two completely different sports. They play differently, the game is different. Don't get me wrong, it's all under the title of football, but I think the women's game, just when you watch it, it's hard to describe it, but it's a lot more, I would say, physical, because I think the men's game, especially the top leagues, the men's game is very pretty football. It's very battered around. Whereas I think women's, you get that bit of aggression, you get that bit of, you've got to fight for every point sort of thing. Whereas I think, probably the biggest one is that it's same as men's. It's not, it's completely different. I think you watch a game and you'll realise that. Another one is probably the pay situation, where people think that women are making livings out of it. There's probably a lot, if people actually read into some of what's going on and the sort of situation we're in, that it's probably a lot less than what they think. They'd probably be shocked by perhaps what a lot of players are earning in the WSL, to be fair. Another one, I think, is that we've got the support the men's have got, because I think if you look into women's football, then you'll realise that there's not as much sponsorship, there's not enough backing. In recent years, we've only got stuff like the same level of medical support and physios and treatment and all that sort of stuff that the men have had. It's only really become professional women's football in the last 10 years. So you think how long men's football has been professional? We're sort of in that same stage. So I think it's just that people think it's at the same level as men's is probably the biggest misconception, and it's clearly not, if you just do a bit of reading around there.
Thank you for educating me on that, because I wasn't, and that's why I asked the question, because I think it's hard to appreciate unless you are someone who is associated with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I suppose, just to kind of wrap up and things like that, looking forward to the future and kind of where your career is headed, is coaching something that you would like to do alongside playing, or do you have aspirations of being the next sort of Emma Haynes or something like that?
I think it's difficult for me to say, because coaching is never really something that's sparked my interest. It's sort of, people have always said, oh, football brain, you should use it. My mum and dad even say that, you've got a football brain, you should use it. But I think if it's not, I've always lived by the thing, if it's not something I really want to do, then why would I put myself through that? So I think, look, I've pretty much saying I don't want to be a coach, it's not really something that interests me. I did my coaching qualification in the summer, so I've clearly taken a different step to that now. I like the thought of one-on-one coaching. That's where I think I perform best. Listen, I'm not going to rule myself out in the future that I might be involved in coaching somewhere along the line, but at the minute I'm doing a master's in sports psychology, which I really find interesting. I specifically like researching into pregnancy and women's football because that's something where there's no research. So I've got one of my papers at the minute, it's going through publication, hopefully to be published. So I think that's sort of something I would really like to focus my attention on in the future, is maybe the women's health side of it more in football than rather the coaching. But like I say, never say never. I've done the coaching qualification now. I could potentially end up, you may see me coaching in a few years time, who knows, but at this moment in time I wouldn't say it's something that's like fully got my 100% focus. I think there is other things that I'm probably more interested at this moment in time, but yeah, never say never sort of thing.
Just quickly then, touching on you know, psychology and the pregnancy that you just spoke about, what are some of the things that you've learned so far?
I mean, I think psychology as a whole, what initially sparked my interest was I've been through so many ups and downs in recent years in terms of I got high when I went to Spurs, I got high when I got my call up, then when I wasn't playing at Watford, it's a low. It's sort of like you realise, I've had that throughout my whole career, you sort of realise that elite sport is a very up and down world we're living in. It's never plain sailing. So I think that initially sparked my sort of interest in psychology, and that is there any way I could sort of make that more consistent? If that makes sense, that it's not so up and down all the time. And then I think the pregnancy thing, it was a conversation I had with one of the players that I was playing with at the time, who'd had two children and come back. And she was like, look, I sort of just, conversation over dinner, and it was sort of, I was like, look, I'd just like to know a bit more about, because it's something that could affect me in the future, something that could affect people I know in the future. It was just sort of like, but as far as the interest, I was like, look, what was the experience like? And we sort of had a conversation about it. And then when it came to write my dissertation, I was a bit like, you know what? That's something I would really like to sort of write about. Because having then looked at literature that was already out there, there was nothing, especially on the psychology side of it. There's quite a bit now on the physical side of it, but not much on the psychology. So I was like, oh, that's really something that would be of benefit to people if there was some research put on that. So yeah, I sort of went and did an interview with the same person and got more information about me. And I think I learned that, like, when she went through the whole experience, there was no medical support. There was no... So she was very in the dark. Now, I think if you look, what was it, Monday, the FA announced the Women's Health Initiative where they're going to support players now. So there's definitely steps now being put in place to support players, but it's something that really needs to be looked at, I think. And like I say, I really believe in it because I'm obviously researching it. I've read around it now, I understand it more. But I think one of the main things I've learned is women's football has a lot more complexity to it, because I think if you look at a woman's body compared to a male's, there's a lot more things you need to factor in. So I do think that's something that needs to be looked at in the future in terms of women's sport in general. But yeah, I think that's why I sort of went into that sort of research, and yeah, hopefully continue on that path, fingers crossed.
100%. And I think that, you know, not only people listening to this or finding out about that side of the game, I think it's a really great thing that you're doing. And yeah, I'm looking forward to learning more just as a fan, really, of the sport and things like that. Just to end up then, I always like to ask people, you know, what's their best attribute or strength as a player or a coach? So what's yours?
As a player, I'd say my technical ability. I think that's always something I've been really strong in. I like to use it a lot in my games. I like to take glory in 1v1s. I like to show what I can do. So playing, I'd definitely say my technical ability. Coaching, I'd say my football brain. I feel like I've been in enough environments now where I've learned different systems, different ways to play in. So I think I understand the game really well. So I think in coaching it would be probably my brain, but in terms of playing it would probably be my feet. My technical ability is probably my strongest factor.
And is there any players that you would kind of liken yourself to? Or you model your game on, should I say?
When I was growing up, I absolutely loved Cristiano Ronaldo, so I would probably say I tried to base a lot of my technical stuff off him. But yeah, like I say, in the women's game, there was no role model for me at that time, so I didn't have anything to base it off. So if I was to go off when I was younger, it would be Ronaldo, because I just loved the way he played.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think, well, in my opinion, he's the best to ever have done it. So that's not a bad person to go with. No, thank you so much for today. Like, I've learned way more than I anticipated, so thank you, Morgan.
No problem at all.
Thank you for listening to this episode of An Athlete's Blueprint. The authentic stories shared in this podcast aren't for everybody. They were just for you, a true sports enthusiast. Whether you're going into your next practice session or at the starting line for the finals, take the winner's insight from the athletes and the coaches you heard from today. Remember, this advice is only available on An Athlete's Blueprint podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.